Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with a Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
Other with the train?
Yes.
Sorry, I thought that was a longer lead back.
Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees, 713-780-ESPN. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want, 713-780-3776. U.S. swim team relay with Phelps. That was a pretty good
one.
Olympic moment. Somebody said the Cotton Bowl, Joe Montana, Notre Dame, U of H. Get out of here with that. I don't want to hear that.
Did you watch that game?
Yeah, no, I didn't watch that game. I've seen highlights of it, though. I know the outcome. That's all I need to know. 713-780-ESPN, Mailbag Monday. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. Let's go out to the HR&P listener line for our resident San Fran fan. Julian, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's your question?
Hey, I'm glad you guys know. Bang, bang, Niner gang, in Brock we trust. Hey, man, so I'm just curious, gentlemen. The legitimacy of Purdy. I think we can get to at least the NFC Championship. I'm not going to be no fool and say he's just going to win the Super Bowl. But he just has to do what he's been doing, which is don't lose the game for us.
I kind of said that, Julian, when we had this pop up in the course of regular conversation on the show. I wouldn't say that for many teams, but that defense is so good, and I hate to say that with you on the line, but yeah, I would think that the Niners could get to the NFC, especially as bad as the Cowboys and Vikings have looked. I think it's going to be a Niners-Eagles situation for the NFC Championship.
You should really go on the limb and say something like that. Really went on the limb.
You don't think that for most other teams, if they lost their starting quarterback and then they lost their other starting quarterback and they had to put a rookie in.
Yes, I do think that. But the Eagles and San Fran are the two betting favorites in the NFC.
Okay, well, I said it, I think, before we got to that point. But, I mean, I also believe, and I said it when I said that Jimmy G would be the starting quarterback by week five of the regular season.
That was luck.
Injury forced it to happen in week three, but I also said that they should have never even thought about getting rid of him.
You said he would start the season.
I thought he, and I did. I said he would start week one. So I was three weeks off, but I also...
because of injury.
Doesn't matter if Butts Candy's
not.
What
do you mean it doesn't matter?
Well, you
matter.
And Dr. Dre claim all your victories. I mean, I'm just claiming that victory, and I also think that the Niners are just that good of a football team, regardless who plays quarterback,
well,
and it's
Dre.
Rare to say that.
The way I look at it from the playoffs is always that to get to a Super Bowl, you have to win at least back-to-back games. To win a Super Bowl, you have to win at least three in a row. I think the San Francisco 49ers, even with Brock Purdy, are capable of winning three in a row in the NFC.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, like, but now you get to the Super Bowl, it's just one game. Like, if San Fran had to play the gauntlet of the AFC, I don't think they could get to a Super Bowl.
I agree with that.
But
that's
the gauntlet of the NFC, I think that they can. I'm not selling the 49ers short.
Especially since I think the path got a lot easier when it looks like the Cowboys and Vikings are pretenders. It looks like both teams, you know, just looked at it and said, oh, I think we're good to at least get there. Yeah. It's up to us to win it.
But the team they're worried about is that 7th seed push right now. Really good shot the 49ers have to play the Lions in that first round.
Hopefully their offensive coordinators accepted a new job before they play in a playoff game. 713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees? Our Mailbag Monday, 713-780-3776. Back out to the HR&P listener line. Roy, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's your question?
Hey, guys, how y'all doing?
Great.
My question is, why are the Texans playing 2 weeks in a row like they've been doing this all along at the beginning of the year? They couldn't buy a pass or buy a touchdown. Well, what's the deal going on, you think, with them?
I think the deal is that Roy was the guy I was talking about when he just saw the score and didn't watch the game, because I don't think that they played all that great this last week. I think they played better against the Cowboys, but it was gimmicky with two quarterbacks. I understand what you're saying, Roy, but I still think that, look, they're showing you exactly who they are, which is not a very good team, not a good roster, not a really good coaching staff. I could go on and on because we have several segments as we open every Monday, it seems, with what the Texans did wrong and how bad they looked. But, I mean, again, that's what I said. There's going to be fans that will hold out hope, and if they'd have beaten the Chiefs, that would have been a monumental type win for a lot of fans.
713-780-ESPN, your question for the Killer Bees. I would say what's going on with the Texans is that the other two teams are stooping down to the level of the Houston Texans. The Dallas Cowboys played a terrible game in front of their home fans, and it took a last drive comeback for the Cowboys to win. Kansas City did everything wrong in critical situations to have that game be competitive yesterday. It should not have been. Kansas City had 502 total yards. The Texans had 219 total yards. You show me a game in NFL history where a team has outgained the other team by the delta we saw yesterday where the other team wins. It does not happen. The reason yesterday's game was close is because of what Kansas City did, not what the Houston Texans did. It's a fluke. It's an anomaly. What you've seen the last 2 weeks is the exact same Texans we've seen all year. It's just that the other two teams that are good stooped to the Houston Texans level. 713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees on our Mailbag Monday? 713-780-3776. 1970. Favorite type of sliced bread for a sandwich?
Favorite type of sliced bread?
He said sourdough is my go-to. I'm assuming it's
not
a he.
Bad.
I don't know if it's a he.
A good French bread cut the right way could be great for like a sub.
Oh, man, this is going to be a terrible take, and I already know it. I might land myself on Thursday's list on Bad Take Boulevard. I think bread's overrated. Anytime that I get a sandwich from like a deli shop, I have them thin it out or hollow it out. Take off as much of the bread you can while making it still sturdy enough to carry all the meats inside of it. The sandwich, the most overrated thing on the sandwich is by far the bread. By far the bread.
Really?
Absolutely. Give me the meats. Give me, like, if you get a good Italian, give me the pastrami. Give me the pepperoni. Give me the salami. I don't need the bread.
So, but that's not the question. It's just picking the best bread.
I said a thinned out bread is the best bread.
Oh, man.
Like what's your favorite? Take. What's your favorite snake? A dead snake. What's your favorite type of bread? A thinned out bread. A hollowed out bread.
I don't think the, like.
I know it's not.
The take that it's overrated in the sandwich, I can listen to. The take that it's overrated as a whole, that bread is overrated as a whole, is just
everybody loves brutal. Bread.
Yeah.
I don't love bread. I can do without bread.
By the way, I would go sourdough as well.
You go sourdough?
Yeah, sourdough is
you get a fresh, like my dad used to get the Italian bread or the French bread, at the fresh, just out of the oven, slice that thing right down the middle and load it up. I mean,
all breads are good.
All world.
713-780-ESPN. What is your question for the Killer Bees? Mailbag Monday, 713-780-3776. King of Twitch is on Twitch, says best ketchup.
It's Heinz, and it's not even, there's no second. I've already made this, I've stated this multiple, I can tell the difference. And look, I know some people like the spicy ketchups at Whataburger and all that other stuff. Look, it's just, to me, I'm a ketchup connoisseur, and I'm a snob about it, and it's Heinz.
My favorite, what'd you say?
Salt-free.
What?
Salt-free, shut up.
Salt-free ketchup.
That's ridiculous.
That does not exist.
It does.
Salt-free ketchup exists.
Oh, yes,
exists.
It does. Oh, it absolutely does. Yeah.
You don't mean sugar-free.
No, I mean salt-free. And it's better than regular.
I think Lisa gets the low-sodium sugar-free. I think you're... Yeah, but yeah. It exists.
How can you have ketchup with no salt in it? That's the beauty of salt, is how savory it is.
Nope, ketchup is great without salt in it.
The best ketchup is spicy ketchup from Whataburger. Spicy ketchup from Whataburger is fantastic. It is the best ketchup that exists. Anything else is subpar and inferior to what is spicy ketchup from Whataburger. Limited edition batch? Even better. It's very, very good. 713-780-ESPN. What is your question for the Killer Bees? Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. James, what's your question?
Hey, man, guys, I want to see what y'all think about them Lions. Man, I feel like they're starting to really kind of start to move and do things. You think they're just going to fake it, or they might come in there and actually do something in the playoffs?
I don't think they're going to fake it. I don't think they're going to fake it. Can I get into my – should I get my Lions hot take, Brendan?
Yeah, go for it.
The Lions should fire Dan Campbell. The Lions should fire the head coach, Dan Campbell. I wouldn't think twice about firing Dan Campbell. They should let him go. He likes to bite knees, whatever. He's scrappy. He likes to fight. He's an Aggie. A lot of great things about Dan Campbell. If I'm the Detroit Lion owner, GM, decision maker, whatever, and I am always looking for what is in the best interest of my organization long term, they should fire Dan Campbell and hire offensive coordinator Ben Johnson before somebody else hires offensive coordinator Ben Johnson. I will say they'll get into the playoffs this year. I think they'll get into the playoffs this year. What do they have to do, Brendan? I don't even know what they have to do.
Dan Campbell found that offensive coordinator. He can find another one. They will run through a wall for Dan Campbell. He's beloved. You say the best long-term success of the Lions, they haven't had one. So this is their chance.
In regards to what they have to do, if they win out, they're pretty close to automatically in.
There you go.
If they go 2-1, they need a little bit of help from Seattle, Washington, New York, all have tough schedules. I'll tell you this. Prior to this week, I would not have picked them to make the playoffs. I think this week I might.
Ben Johnson and the Detroit Lions are going to go into Carolina, whoop up on the Panthers. They're going to take on Chicago at home. They're going to beat them in the Silver Dome.
They're
going to head to Lambeau Field, final week of the regular season, and they're going to spat all over the frozen tundra as they beat the Green Bay Packers, and then Ben Johnson's going to hop on a private plane, head to Houston, and be the next head coach of the Houston Texans. Who says no?
That could have playoff implications for both teams on that last game of the regular season, Packers-Lions in Lambeau Field.
8755, best alcoholic drink to drink during the holidays. A mixed drink, mine is mojitos. My favorite drink is Gentle Ben Bourbon. Double platinum winner of the prestigious Ascot Awards. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. How do you feel about eggnog?
I'm not a fan of the way it sounds. But when I have tried it, it's not bad. I don't think it would be my go-to.
Rum,
it's very filling and everything. I could see
rum and eggnog.
Yeah.
I don't like eggnog. I'm not a fan of eggnog. I don't like any sort of like milky, creamy alcoholic drink, period. 9723, favorite carnival food.
Ooh.
Oh, I got a good one.
I got a
three-course meal.
What do you got?
Turkey legs, my entree, and a funnel cake's my dessert.
Funnel cakes are really good.
Turkey leg, funnel cake. Or funnel cake.
You can't go wrong with a corn dog, I'll take turkey leg over corn dog.
But funnel cake for sure on the dessert.
Yeah. Maybe a little appetizer of cotton candy. Do you ever go to carnivals?
I like the fresh hot popcorn anywhere. But when you get the carnival, when you get the popcorn wagons that are at the carnivals that pop it right there in front of you again, I think that's awesome.
All right. That's our Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees. If you have a question for the Killer Bees, you have to wait till next Monday. We won't even be here. All right. Are the Oilers off the hook? We'll tell you what we mean and if they are. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's back again, the ESPN Listener Christmas Party. Join us Friday, December 23rd for our annual Christmas Party shenanigans. Don't let the cold stop you from the party. We broadcast an all show 7A to 7P at Nick's Place, plus we'll be giving away exclusive ESPN holiday shirts throughout the day. You won't want to miss any of it. Come early and stay late, 7A, 7P at Nick's Place. Are the Oilers off the hook? We saw what happened Saturday, tripleheader Saturday in the NFL. Minnesota Vikings were trailing the Indianapolis Colts 33-0, which it's ironic. Frank Reich's the one that led the comeback against the Houston Oilers, and he is the head coach that got fired to the team that allowed the 33-point lead to evaporate on Saturday. We know the story. Colts are up 33-0 at the half. Vikings come back. They win it in overtime, 39-36. It is larger than the comeback the Buffalo Bills had against the Houston Oilers back in the AFC playoffs back in the day. Are the Oilers, because I saw a lot of tweets about this, are the Oilers now off the hook that the Colts blew a bigger lead than the Oilers did against the Bills?
No, because the situation matters at the time of the season. It's just a regular season game at this point to do what the Colts did. I mean, the fact that the Oilers did it in the playoffs, that's the sting. That's the longevity of the pain. That's what makes it so memorable and also so hard to have to deal with anytime any other team makes any kind of comeback. Because it was the playoffs. It was just a regular season game. I think you could sweep it under the rug, but even though it would be tough, it's a lot tougher when it happens when it did to the Oilers.
I don't believe it lets them off the hook either. And the reason that you talk about is why I think about it as well, it's the stakes. It was what was on the line. You had the Houston Oilers playing in the playoff game against the Buffalo Bills. And one of the things that I think kind of gets lost a little bit when we remember back to that playoff game is that that was a first-round game on the road. It's not like the Houston Oilers were projected to go to the Super Bowl that year. Now, the Bills ended up going to the Super Bowl, ended up going all the way and doing what the Bills do, losing in the Super Bowl. But that was the first round of the postseason, and you're on the road against Buffalo. I don't think that the Texans or the Oilers were going to be a Super Bowl contender in the AFC. Some people thought so. Not really sure if I would go that far. You're going to have to win a bunch of games on the road to get there.
Team of Destiny, Jeremy.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. We know how much I love the Team of Destiny talk. Now, but while I say that, absolutely it does not let the Houston Oilers off the hook. I wish it did. Houston Oilers are my favorite NFL franchise of all time. I love the Oilers, grew up on the Oilers, love them very, very, very much. They had a place in my heart that the Houston Texans have not been able
to completely capture.
I loved you blue. Yeah. Absolutely.
Look, and again, from afar, I was a fan of that team. Look, the high-powered offense and the Warren Moon beautiful spirals and all the things that they did and then the way the defense played. Look, again, we talk about games that could have changed the complexion of franchises, and we talked about how the Rockets could have had a different outcome with some of their finals matchups with the Knicks and the Magic and some of the way the games went. I think that could have been franchise altering in the way it everything went down with the Oilers. And you think about it, with Bud Adams versus the city, had that been the start of winning, or we don't know how far they could have gone, and that they could have capitalized and won more, could that have changed everything and the Oilers still could be in Houston? You don't know. But that's
kind of a reach there, I think.
I don't know. They had some really, really good teams that came up short.
Right, but they're going to stay in Houston. All of a sudden, the stadium's like, they're going to give the Oilers stadium.
But I mean, if they win that game, and then, well, like I said, we don't know how far they go, but that could have changed, what was it, Bob Lanier at the time, the mayor, and everybody's ideas about what Bud Adams wanted with a new stadium. And maybe that was the start of changing the complexion of the Oilers staying in Houston. I'm just throwing it out there because I think that could have been a much bigger game for the city and the team.
I just don't know how you got there.
Well, I got there pretty easily.
Are the Oilers off the hook? And all of a sudden, it's like, if they win that game, they're staying in Houston.
They might.
Your stadium.
You never know.
But it's a different conversation. I think both of those things, different conversations perhaps. But even though the Colts blew a bigger lead than the Houston Texans blew, the fact that the fact that the Oilers did it in a playoff game, mm-hmm. that's not going to be forgotten.
No.
Even though the Colts blew the bigger lead, it's still the Oilers with the bigger collapse, in my opinion, because it was a playoff game, because their season was on the line, because maybe they are a team of destiny that could go on and get to a Super Bowl for the first time in Oilers franchise history. All the Colts did by losing this football game is get a better draft position for a team that wasn't going to make the playoffs anyways.
Right.
Like, you can make a case the Colts blowing that lead was actually in the best interest of the Colts. 713-780-ESPN, or the Oilers off the hook. 3501 says Frank Reich was a backup quarterback. Let me learn you a little something about the Buffalo Bills when they came back and beat the Houston Oilers when the Oilers blew that big lead. Jim Kelly was hurt.
Yes, he was.
Jim Kelly did not play in that game. Frank Reich played in that game. He threw 4 touchdown passes in that game. Listen to the Killer Bees, 12-3, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, and we'll teach you a thing or two. 713-780-ESPN, 3501 Lamont. Oilers are not off the hook, but neither is Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan owns the Super Bowl and regular season all-time comeback L. I saw a bunch of tweets about killing Matt Ryan. I feel a little bit bad about Matt Ryan, like, looking at this Colts game. I'm not sure how much fault you could put at the hands of Matt Ryan for blowing this 33-point lead at the half.
Well, he looked like, especially when they needed him to again at late in the game, he looked like he couldn't complete a pass if his life depended on it. He was throwing ducks all over the place. I mean, if you do want to say that there's a fair title to be given in terms of from choking, he's choked twice, and both of them were monumental. The Patriots Super Bowl that they blew, and then this game here, to be attached to both of them like that, it's not a good look.
No, I'm not going to. It's not a great look for Matt Ryan. I thought it was ironic, though, that the Colts were the one that blew this lead after firing Frank Reich, and Frank Reich is the dude.
Yeah.
That led the comeback against the Houston Oilers back in the day. All right, there was another crazy game in the NFL. It wasn't only the comeback loss for the Indianapolis Colts that did not let the Oilers off the hook. But if you didn't catch this, here was the way that the Raiders and Patriots ended yesterday.
Mac Jones hands it off on a draw to Ramondre Stevenson, breaks out of a tackle at the 50, has the 45, breaks away from another tackle, pitches it backwards, and now Jacoby Myers spinning around, he throws it to Chandler Jones in midfield, and a stiff arm! Chandler Jones racing towards the end zone! He scores! Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness!
I can't believe what I just saw!
Again!
I can't believe what I just saw! This is unbelievable! Wow!
On the first night of Hanukkah, it's a miracle in Las Vegas!
BK's going to love that final line. This is one of the wackiest endings in NFL history, in football history, that you had Myers trying to throw the ball across the field to Mac Jones, who he said he saw open, which was not. He literally looked like he was throwing it right to Chandler Jones. Chandler Jones just running right through Mac Jones like
right.
He was like knife through butter was hilarious. But what an unbelievable finish to the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots, this could cost them the playoffs.
Yeah.
This could cost them making the postseason because Jacoby Myers goes rogue, tries to be a hero, and just gives the game to the Las Vegas Raiders.
It's unfortunate. He claimed it. He owned it. He said it was all on me. He thought Mac Jones was open. He wasn't, obviously. Mac Jones could have made the tackle. I thought Belichick, Mr. you know, unbelievable guy that prepares for everything and tactician and all the different names that you have for Belichick as a coach. At least he accepted it and was like, you know what, we've got to be better, but these things happen. So, I mean, again, I appreciate everybody owned it instead of like dumping on somebody or pushing it off, but that was crazy.
Myers is lying, right?
No.
What,
absolutely
that, he,
not.
That he saw Mac Jones open?
I think he forgot the situation of the game. That's what I think happened.
Well, this was like, are you saying that this is the equivalent?
He thought they were trailing.
I think when he got the lateral, he forgot that it was a tie game and they didn't need to score.
This was the football equivalent of when LeBron James, when they did that, when they thought that, what was name? What's his name?
No idea what you're talking about.
The playoff game when he thought it was tied.
Oh, you're talking about J.R. Smith.
J.R. Smith.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure. When J.R. Smith did the same, and LeBron was like, what are you doing?
It's worse, but very similar.
I saw this theory out there on Twitter. I personally don't believe so. I don't think that he forgot, because the reason why is you're not handing the football off there. You're not running a draw whenever you're behind. I don't think Jacoby Myers forgot the score. I really don't.
I don't believe that he said, oh, I see Mac Jones 50 open 50 yards away from the end zone. He's going to score here. Like, I just.
But you're just keeping the play alive at that point. Like,
you make a great point. I don't think that they started out by calling a play to where they were going to run their lateral play. But I think that once it started, guys get engaged, and then they lose focus on the bigger picture in the moment.
I don't believe it.
Even if it's not the case, I don't believe it.
You're not running.
Mac Jones was open.
Ooh, I mean, Mac Jones was alone. He just didn't get it there.
He 25-yard throw backwards.
He just didn't get it there. Mac Jones was open. He just didn't get it there.
Jacoby
not
Myers
even close.
Have to be a QB to make that throw.
It was a stupid decision. Absolutely stupid. And it was like an overinflation of what he thought his arm talent was. But I don't think Jacoby Myers forgot the score. You're not running a halfback draw down in that game. I don't believe Jacoby Myers thought that. And Jacoby Myers talked after the game. And he said that, you know, he was trying to be a hero. But you're saying that he wasn't being honest in that moment. Maybe we'll ask the Hive. 713-780-ESPN. Did Jacoby Myers forget the spot or forget the situation? I don't believe he did. I really don't.
And I think that, you know, when people look at the play that went wrong there, I mean, that's to me. I had notions of thinking back to the Music City Miracle just because of the way that the laterals were happening. But I don't think, like I said, I think you bring up a point that I didn't think about, which is the fact that if that was going to be the lateral play, and then they would have been more focused on everything and all the details, it would have been a pass play. The fact that it was a draw, and he ended up getting through the first line of defense and started to get yards, and you were like, oh, wait a minute, maybe with a shorter field they could pull something off. I think he panicked. He looked to try and keep the play going, and he screwed up.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Here is what Jacoby Myers said after the poor decision that cost the Patriots this game.
Just doing the last play, was the plan to lateral the ball?
No, just... Trying to do too much, trying to be a hero, I guess you could call it, kind of. I ain't see the dude back there try throwing the ball. Like I said, I was just doing too much, you know what I'm saying? Should have just went down the ball.
That was Jacoby Myers good after the game. Do you believe him? 713-780-ESPN, or do you believe Brendan's theory? He forgot the moment. 713-780-3776. Also, Michael Brantley is back. He is again a Houston Astro. Where does he fit in to the Houston Astros lineup? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Did you believe Jacoby Myers' story? What he was doing on that final play. Junction Jack rides on the trains there at Minute Maid. He said the game was tied. What the Patriots did was just plain stupid. I believe Jacoby. I really do. I believe that he went rogue. He was trying to be a hero in the moment. I don't think he forgot the score. I really don't.
I think a lot of times you get caught in the moment. And again, because it wasn't what they were setting out to do at the start of the play. Look, I think everybody's got a different mentality. You have assistant coaches that are in your ear and everybody telling you, hey, look, no, you know, don't try and do too much. You know, it's a tie game. But if it sets out to be a running play that you accept the fact that whatever happens, you're going to overtime, and all of a sudden, spur of the moment, off the cuff, it becomes the lateral play, everybody just gets caught in it.
You know who's being let off the hook here? Because we're looking at Jacoby's throw, which was bad. We look at Mac Jones getting lit up by Chandler Jones. Stevenson's the guy that completely gets left off the hook here. It all started with Stevenson. Yeah. Stevenson's the one who made the first stupid lateral. It's just that his stupid lateral connected.
Well,
whereas Jacoby Myers' stupid lateral
didn't connect.
But it was a good
play that led to that bad play because he broke through.
Was that a good play, though, to lateral it? I mean, he gained a bunch of yards against a...
The difference is more than just the connection of the lateral.
What do you mean?
Well, for one, it's a two-yard lateral. There's, like, if
yeah, the
by
high, the
some
risk.
Chance, yeah,
the
if
risk.
By some chance that the lateral isn't connected,
yeah,
there's a lot less risk. Also, you're so close. Like, they weren't close enough to justify Stevenson's lateral.
Stupid. They're both laterals.
But they're
were
like
stupid.
The 20-yard line. Like, if they're 10 yards closer, could you justify it? Because I think so.
Hold on. What did you just say? If they're at the 20-yard line,
they were at like the 20. I'm saying if they're
no,
like
they
10
weren't.
Yards closer, how far were they?
Stevenson lateraled it at the, from the shy of the 30. He was like
okay,
at the 32.
And maybe he's a little further than I thought. My thought is you can get to a point where you justify it. And it's not the 30. So
I don't think so.
I do.
I don't think so. Josh Allen tried to do that in a playoff game against the Texans the
yeah,
year that the Texans won, and he got crushed for it. And I thought his decision at the time, high risk, high reward, if it landed, would have been like the greatest play in playoff history. But like that one was a little bit different. Like that was more of like an option than this guy like literally laddering it behind him. Like there was the Raiders were playing a prevent defense knowing that the Patriots had to score a touchdown. So he gained 20 yards on the carry. Nowhere to go. Stevenson's being left off the hook. His lateral was the first stupid decision in a chain of results that were all very stupid.
I think it's valid, but I think that, again, he should get credit because of the fact that they were assuming he was just going to be tackled as soon as he crossed the line of scrimmage, and we're moving on to overtime. The fact that he broke it, and you can hear in the announcers like, oh, wait a minute, he's got some space. He actually got further than they were expecting, but then all of a sudden becomes a complete freestyle, and during the freestyle, all hell broke loose. So I think it's a valid point to say that he started it.
Yeah, it was chain of stupid decisions. 713
Brendan Riley.
713-780 ESPN. 713-780-3776. Michael Brantley reportedly back to the Astros, a 12-year deal or $12 million deal 1 year. That'd be a lot of years to give to a dude in his late 30s. But Brantley's back, $4 million incentives, all of that stuff. Brantley fitting into this batting lineup. We know whenever Brantley was in the lineup, whenever Brantley was healthy before he got hurt, he was the fixture in the two spot. You can pretty much pencil him in for a 300 batting average, a 350 on base. You pretty much know what you have from Michael Brantley. But then Brantley got hurt. The Astros kind of played musical chairs with that two spot for a while. They eventually just gave it to Jeremy Pena. Pena had a really good success in that two spot. We know the Astros' record was very good with Jeremy Pena in the two spot. Won the ALCS MVP, World Series MVP. Now that Brantley's back in the fold, Brantley a more natural two-hole hitter. He's going to hit for a higher average, more on base than Jeremy Pena. Where does Michael Brantley fit into this Houston Astros batting order now that he is back?
I really think that he fits in the sixth hole. Sixth or seventh hole. I mean, he fits in down at the bottom of the lineup. The days of him hitting second are over basically because of what Jeremy Pena did in the playoffs. Because he did that, because that means so much to Dusty having seen there to say, been there, done that, and now I'm going to do it again, which is what Dusty likes to do. He tried it. It worked. They won a World Series because of it. Now it's basically etched in stone that they are not going to move him out of that spot, nor should they have to. And I think it just shows how much more lethal the bottom half of the order can be now than it was a year ago. If Michael Brantley is just healthy, there's no pressure on him, and he's not trying to set the table for the heart of your order. Now he's giving you like icing on the cake down there at the bottom of the order where you basically would have written in and penciled in three outs at the start of last season. Now you've got a legit stick at the bottom three.
I'm going to make it a New Year's resolution of mine not to care about Dusty Baker's batting orders. I'm going to try to spend 2023 focusing my energy on caring about things that actually matter. Because, look, Dusty Baker a lot of times ignores like the optimal lineup, the metrics, the analytics, all of that. And he might lose some expected value there by doing that. But what he loses, he gains in expected value based on some of his old school approaches. We thought he was nuts. The analytical community thought he was silly, delusional, senile, all of these things for putting Jeremy Pena, who didn't have a very good batting average, did not have a very good on-base percentage, into the second spot. The analytical community would have never done that. But Dusty Baker did. Jeremy Pena took off, was outstanding in the second spot. The team won a bunch of games, and then he had great individual success after that. I'm going to, in Dusty We Trusty, when it comes to his batting orders next year. This is something I didn't say in 2022. But I like to use my New Year's resolutions to grow, to mature as a person, to understand a little bit more. So I'm not going to care at all this year with the Astros in the regular season about the batting orders that Dusty puts together. I believe that Dusty's going to stick with the Jeremy Peña in the second spot when the season starts because he had great success with it. And then if, you know, he struggles or if there's somebody else struggling in the lineup, there's going to be injury, then, you know, make the appropriate changes. I love the idea of just keeping Peña there. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. You have the natural feng shui in the batting order that led you to a World Series. So I'm with you on the idea. Just put Michael Brantley in that seventh spot after Abreu and let him be that last dude before Chaz and Maldi that can, you know, knock in some runs, hit for a high average, maybe get on base for those guys.
I appreciate and I like where you're going with the resolution. But I think that if the Astros don't have the cakewalk in the regular season that they had a year ago and some of those decisions and some of those things become a little bit more important or a little bit more in the heat of the moment, you're going to stay solid on this?
I'm going to stay solid. And Dusty, I trust you when it comes to those batting orders. It might not make sense. It might spat in the face of the analytical community. The numbers might not back it up. But in Dusty, I trust you when it comes to batting orders.
We'll see.
Plus, I don't think batting orders really matter all that much. Like, I know that
it's more the resting of the guys and healthy days off and some of the things that also frustrate. Look, we were legit in a lot of our reasoning behind being critical of Dusty in the regular season. And obviously, it all paid off because they were planning for the playoffs. And we talked about the fact that it's the equivalent of the NBA doing the healthy rest, you know, policies that they go through to prepare for the playoffs with their superstars. It sucks as a fan. But now, because it worked, you're going to be a little bit more open to it, and hopefully they have the same kind of lead in the division and don't have to worry about it, like, altering or interfering with your playoff positioning.
No, I'm done worrying about Dusty's lineups. Okay. Hey, Dusty, I trust you. During the regular season, I'm just going to get out of the way. Dusty makes the lineups. And plus, again, I don't think that lineups really matter that much. I think you could draw it out of a hat, and the run production is going to be about the same. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Ocho says, I trust Brantley more as a hitter, but I like Peña's speed at the top of the order. I could go either way. Brantley's probably going to have a higher average if healthy and a higher on base. Peña, a lot of people don't necessarily agree that you have to have speed at the top of the lineup. D. Green says, to answer the question about Peña or Brantley at number two, ask yourself this question. Do you want the ALCS and World Series MVP to get more at-bats or a guy coming off surgery? Okay, that's kind of leading the jury here, D. Green. That's kind of leading the witness. I could also play that game, D. Green. Do we want a dude that's a career 250 hitter batting in the second spot with a career 290 on base percentage? Or do we want a career hitter that hits 300 with a 350 on base percentage? I can play that game too, D. Green. I can selectively cherry pick certain stats to make the case for you.
We can also, that also goes back to my theory about, you know, analytically and otherwise, you can always find a stat that supports your case. The thing that I think is, bottom line, Michael Brantley ain't getting you that extra base in the start of in the early
Probably
stages
not.
Of a game. He's not going to be stretching it to score from second with one out and the heart of the lineup looking for an RBI in like April, May, and June. But you know what? He's a hell of a bat. It's a great luxury to have no matter where you put him in the lineup, because as long as he stays healthy, you know what he's going to do. It's not like a one-and-done situation or a sophomore jinx or anything that could be brought up with a lot of other guys as they're developing the early stages of their career. Michael Brantley's a stick, and no matter where he is in the lineup, you're a better team because of it. He's in the lineup. So that's great, and it's a great problem for the Astros to have.
Yeah, you said it. It's a great problem for the Astros to have. They have a deep lineup. The days of worrying about batting orders, so beneath me. I'm a new brand.
Oh, my God. We're keeping a scoreboard.
Batting orders is so beneath me.
Okay.
Your feeble mind does not understand the complexity.
All right. Oh, now I got a feeble mind. Now you got
to
take a pot shot.
I was talking to the city. I wasn't talking to you. I would never call your mind feeble.
Joel, I think
at least to your face.
I think it's next year's Brandon beautification.
Yeah, next year's Brandon beautification. We're worrying
How'd
about batting orders is so beneath me. I'm prettier today than I was January 1st, 2022.
You got a lot. I noticed you've got the hair just... You have it coiffed. You have it backloaded again.
I have a hair appointment today.
Oh,
it will be gone.
There you go.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Where do you put Brantley in this lineup now that he's back? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. The biggest road win in Cougar basketball history, and also the dude that caught Aaron Judge's ball. Lost some money. Tell you why and how. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, you want to make sure that you come out smelling like a rose this holiday season? Well, it's not too late, guys. If you haven't done your your holiday shopping yet. You haven't got the Christmas shopping done. You haven't shopped for Hanukkah for the significant other. You think that you may have dropped the ball. You can still save the holiday with naturally nude pajamas from Pajamagram. They are like wearing absolutely nothing if you're her, and they feel soft and silky just like her own skin. For you, it's the gift that keeps on giving. You get them for her. She wears them for you. Bada bing, bada boom. You don't need any kind of mistletoe to have a holly jolly Christmas and a happy, happy holiday season. I'm telling you guys, she is going to love these pajamas. And the greatest thing about it, it's the gift that keeps on giving in a multitude of ways. Not just because she's going to wear them for you, but if you get her naturally nude pajamas right now, they're going to throw in the naturally nude nightgown, a $75 value. Two gifts for the price of one, and you get to reap all the benefits of her wearing both. That's fantastic. They're going to wrap the gifts for free for you, so therefore you don't have to sit there fiddling around with tape and scissors and actually schlepping up what otherwise is a fantastic gift. And they're going to make sure they deliver it in time for the holidays so you can get the benefits going for the entire holiday season. All you have to do, and you got to hurry because last year they sold out before Christmas and therefore put all you guys in a bind that thought you had all the time in the world to get this done. Do it right now. Pajamagram.com. That's right. Pajamagram.com. Naturally nude pajamas. They'll throw in the nightgown. They'll do the gift wrapping and they'll get it there in time. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
8693, Brantley could be using a cane, 83 years old, and I'd still be confident he'll rope an RBI double. People felt that way about Tony Gwynn, Ted Williams. Great hitters. Although Green was slightly overrated. 7945, I just recently got into baseball 2 years ago. After listening you guys talk about the Astros, wouldn't the lineup 1 through 3 be on base guys? And then number 4 being someone with a high RBI. Yeah, analytical community would pretty much say that. In fact, a lot of people think you should just go like reverse on base percentage. Highest on base percentage first, and then you go down 1 through 9 from there. Some other people think put your biggest bopper in the cleanup spot, put 3 high on base guys in front of him. But Dusty Baker's not of the analytical mind. He's not of the sabermetrics mind. He believes in trust and gut. And in Dusty, I trusty. Worked with Jeremy Pena. He's earned my trust.
I'm going to see how long this lasts.
It's going to last all year.
We'll see. No, you say that.
It's going to last all season long.
It's easy to say it now when we're talking about like lows and of 15 and no baseball. No. We'll see how long it lasts in the regular season.
Worrying about batting orders is a thing of the past. It is so beneath me.
Like a family looking to save on their taxes. They got receipts. They put them in the shoebox.
It is so beneath me. Okay. Worrying about batting orders. Right. Ocho saying, how is Tony Gwynn overrated? I don't have the time for this. Check Wade Boggs.
Tony Gwynn and overrated are never should be mentioned together.
People call Tony Gwynn like one of the greatest all-time hitters. He's not even in the top 50. He's not. He was great. He's a Hall of Famer, yes, but he's not one of the greatest offensive players ever. That's outrageous.
I don't know about offensive players, there but I go. Think just in terms of like his eye and his approach
what
to hitting.
What do you mean? He never walked. Ever. Like the dude was a free swinger. Never, ever. He could hit it anywhere,
at any time.
But he didn't have an
dude
eye.
He was an amazing hitter.
He was great at touching the ball with his bat. Yes.
That's the last segment of the show. I'm not getting fired up.
He was. He didn't hit for tremendous power. He didn't walk a ton. He was a great contact hitter. I'll give you that. Great contact hitter. One of the greatest contact hitters ever. He's not one of the top 50 offensive best players of all time.
He hit for average pretty well.
Sure, he did. I told you that. Yeah, okay. He hit for average really well. He's one of the greatest contact hitters ever. He could touch the ball really well.
Okay.
He could touch it really well. Anyways, the Cougars, the number 3 team in the nation. They've climbed up the polls after the greatest road victory in program history. They've never beaten a team.
Purdue won still?
I didn't actually see the whole polls, but Purdue didn't lose. So I imagine they're still number one. It's probably Purdue, UConn, us.
Okay.
Yeah, because Purdue didn't lose. UConn didn't lose. We beat number 2 Virginia
on the
road.
Good bounce back win Saturday. Fun to watch. Love to see the fact that they kind of learned from what happened with Alabama. They were in control of the game. They didn't kind of go back and start to suck the air out of the ball and run clock. I liked a lot of the way they played. It was two really good teams playing each other. On the road, that's a great win for the Cougs.
Yeah, it was. Greatest road victory in program history. They've never beaten a team ranked in the top 2 in program history. They did that on Saturday. Greatest road win in program history was, like you said, a really good game. Marcus Sasser started to heat up a little bit. For best game that I've seen Jairus Walker play. He didn't have career highs in anything. Like, he didn't have his career high in points, didn't have a career high in rebounds. But in terms of like a solid, productive game, offense going through him, playing through him, really, really good to
see.
A little
concerned when he hit the floor?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to see the replay immediately to make sure that wasn't anything more serious.
Yeah, I was. I was a little worried when he hit the floor. I was glad whenever he went back to the scores table and checked into the game. He had 14,000 people there, over 14,000 people
I was going to ask
there.
You about the environment.
See, like, being able to go on the road in that type of environment, beating a team who's Final Four caliber tells you that Houston's Final Four caliber. Oh. I think there's like 15 teams that are Final Four caliber.
I think some people needed to have that kind of validation. I didn't. I mean, I just think, one, the guy at the helm is a defensive-minded coach, and he knows what to do to get the best out of the kind of team that he has. But two, when you look at it, it's not just five. It's not a starting five. They're deep. They can play a multitude of different ways. They've got scoring galore in the backcourt, but if you need it, you can get scoring from the front court. I think this team is more built for the tournament than anything else, but the fact that they got that kind of a road win, especially coming off the disappointment of having a double-digit lead and losing to Alabama,
yeah,
I think it says so much about just this team this year, but overall the program and Kelvin. I'm so happy for everybody involved, including you.
You know I wear my scarlet-colored goggles all the time, my scarlet-colored glasses all the time, but you can take some encouragement too. I mean, even in the Alabama loss, you don't want to lose.
Sure.
I mean, you didn't love the way that it finished.
You had a 15-point lead against Alabama.
One of the most talented rosters in all of college basketball. So this season going, you know, it's fun. It's fun. Wednesday, the final out-of-conference game for the Cougars before they enter conference play.
And the Zags beating Alabama got them down and bumped them down a notch a little bit too.
See, honestly, I think that the rankings and stuff are kind of, like, it's fun to be ranked at the top. Oh. It's fun to watch where your team's ranked. I think we put way too much stock in it.
I think it means more for, like, the annals of history for programs to say we were number one.
It's a fun storyline.
And we did this and we did that. Look, I think that you can even say from an Alabama perspective, we mentioned it after they beat the Cougs, to beat two number one ranked teams in less than 30 days. It hadn't been done since, like, the 60s. That's impressive. Yeah. But it really means nothing. The overall, I'm looking at all these teams, looking at it, and I said to you, leading into the show, we were coming in here, I said, look, the Zags win was impressive because they kind of got it together. I was a little worried after as tough a schedule as they played early on, they might not be the caliber of team they've been in the past. But to beat Alabama in Alabama, not at the university, but in Birmingham, that's a big win for a Zags team to say we're going to be a part of this melee of good teams at the end of the year that are going to compete for a title. There's no head and shoulders dominant one, and there's a whole lot of really good teams at the top. That's why the tournament's going to be so much fun.
A lot of people are killing me for my Tony Gwynn take. You can tweet me at Jeremy Branham and we can debate it.
Thank God they didn't send them my way this time.
4965, I'm guessing you did not play baseball. I had a better batting average in high school than Tony Gwynn did lifetime. I was a 400 career hitter in high school.
4 of 10?
2 for 5.
Oh.
2 for 5. Okay. I was outstanding off the bench. I was very good. Aaron Judge, he had that, I laugh when I say record-setting home run ball. He had that home run ball that was 7th most all-time in Major League Baseball history single season. Aaron Judge is your 7th place home run king of Major League Baseball. But that baseball that he did hit in Arlington, that fan that caught it, he turned down an offer of $3 million once upon a time.
Right after it happened.
Right after it happened. Instead, he took it to auction, which I think I would have done too. I really do. Like, I don't want to play hindsight 2020. I think I would have done that too. I think I would have taken it to auction. Because if you have one person bidding $3 million, you feel like if you take it to auction, you're probably going to get more.
But you're a very frugal, smart business guy.
Yeah, but also like capitalism and
capitalizing. You're not a Yankee fan. So your heart's not involved in this thing, right? You're a Ranger fan in Arlington. You catch the ball.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And you think about this, and you know what we know as baseball fans. It didn't break the all-time record. Not for the a career, you know, not for the, you know, for the full season. Yeah, you got 62,
sure.
Okay? But you already, and you mock it all the time, but when you think about it, it wasn't like the top of the mountain. You got to capitalize while the iron's hot, because with passing time, especially with how the baseball control and everything with home run happy Major League Baseball is, you don't know how long any of these records are going to last. I just think if you never had any intention of selling it, that's one thing. But if you wanted to maximize it.
He put it at auction before the first pitch of the very next season. So, I mean.
I would have put it in auction before the very next pitch the next day.
I would have probably put it in auction quicker than he did.
Because he might stockpile more. He might have another, you know.
But if somebody offered you, let's just say $3 million for your car right now. Let's go house. Somebody offered you out of the blue $3 million for your house, and you had no other offers. You didn't have it for sale. You didn't have it for auction, any of that. Would you accept that offer, or would you, like, put it up for auction or put it on sale to see what the market gives you?
I would take, like, an hour or two to figure out if I'm missing something, like realistically, if it's real estate wise or if it's sitting on something. But other than that, it wouldn't take me long to say, me and my family can benefit from that $3 million, no matter how much someone else might benefit more, and I would sell it.
Yeah, but I just feel like if somebody offers you $3 million before it's ever up for sale, it's ever up for auction, nothing else, that you're probably, in my mind, you're missing out on a bigger offer.
I mean, you get inquisitive about what do they know that I don't, why? But at the same time, if I'm going to make $3 million on my house...
You need an understanding of the market. I see what you're saying. Like, yeah. You need it's easier to find, and it's easier to find the understanding of the market, like on a house, than it is.
I know
how
much that would affect the rest of myself and my family's life, regardless of who could also benefit even more so by making a shrewd business move. That I would say that would affect us so positively for such a long period of time.
I mean, I get
that. I don't
think
I could say no to that.
But what if you got offered $3 million and then you find out later that the next guy got $6 million? You'd still be kicking yourself. But anyway,
you could. But at least I knew from my own personal situation that you'd benefit immensely.
Sure. This guy ended up selling it for auction, got $1.5 million. So he turned down $3 million. He got $1.5 million at auction. So, you know, half off basically. He lost half of what he could have had. How hard would you be kicking yourself if you did this, if you lost $1.5 million, or does it still feel like a major win for you?
I think it's still, at the end of the day, you have to be able to step away and say, that's $1.5 million, and then minus whatever you had to pay the auction house or whatever, that I would have never had, and what did I, all because I went to the, what sat in the bleachers with my mitt and caught a ball. So it's still a win for you, but that's a tough pill to swallow to say, I could have made double this if I just would have just been shrewd enough to say, I came with nothing. I could have walked away with nothing. The fact that I caught this ball and someone's going to give me $3 million, which is life-changing, I should have taken it.
1.5 is still life-changing.
And I think it's less than 1.5 when you talk about all the fees and charges.
I mean, you're still going to get taxed for the $3 million too.
Plus you got to give up to the auction house.
Yeah. 8693, someone gave that guy some bad advice. Like Blenker said, you got to do it while it's hot. Not taking $3 million for a stupid baseball you caught is American greed. I'll be really very, very, very sad for one day. And then the very next day, I'd be like, I got $1.5 million. I'm all right. I'd be sad for one day. Very, very happy the very next day.
Could have had double that.
I know, it's sad. It's very sad. Yeah. All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank on Branham. We'll talk to
Football!
You for 30 minutes tomorrow, Houston. The Will House is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Carlson and all these soccer truthers, certainly that.